papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Welcome to The Media Project, an inside look at media coverage of current events. I am not Rex Smith. I'm Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette. Now I'm vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. I'm filling in as host this week. With us today is Barbara Lombardo, former editor of the Saratogian, and now she's an adjunct professor at the University of Albany. We've got Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld here and WAMC news director Ian Pickus. Thanks all for being here.
Hello,
with me.
Hello, Judy.
Guide me through this hosting gig. Let's start with AI, artificial intelligence. ChatGPT developer OpenAI has signed a deal to bring news content from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, the Times, and the Sunday Times to the artificial intelligence platform. That deal was estimated to be worth about $250 million. I would like to note that last year, OpenAI, the same company, came up with a two-year deal with the American Journalism Project to help fund local outlets to experiment with artificial intelligence. That deal was worth $5 million. At the same time, Meta, who has consistently walked away from heightening news delivery on its platform, Facebook, it announced this week that it has reached an agreement to promote for its Meta AI deal to scan news outlet and summarize their latest stories and headlines for anyone who asks its Meta AI artificial intelligence bot. So, any of you experimented with AI, and what have you found when you've searched your local community?
Well, let's just be clear to the listeners, and maybe to me too. The problem here is different from the situation that's become historic over the last couple of decades, which is the internet, like a Google, picking up a newspaper story or a broadcast story and then linking it so that the computer user can find the story and the generator of the story is getting the benefit of the new clicks that they might not already get. As I understand it, with AI now, they're scanning these stories and writing stories, and they're using our, broadly, the media's content, and they're not either linking it or even acknowledging that it came from another source. And so that is thus costing us traffic on our sites that we used to be getting. Is that a fair summary of that?
Yes.
Yes, it is. I followed Judy's suggestion yesterday of ask Meta AI about what your community news, what's going on in your community. And I did exactly that. I just went to the search bar and asked that question. And then it asked me my age. And at least it wasn't one of those where you had to scroll up and keep scrolling to get to whatever it might be. And then it asked for my zip code, which was a reasonable question because otherwise it wouldn't know what my community was. And then it came up with maybe five or six headlines of stories, not the stories themselves, five or six headlines. They all pretty much clearly had some kind of a Saratoga Springs connection. And then at the bottom of the page, it said something like link to sources or something to that effect. And I clicked on that. And what came up was, because you couldn't click on any of those items, they were just a few words and no link. When you link to sources, you would get the Saratogian's front page, you know, any edition of the front page or their website edition. And that's where those stories were. And from reading about that Meta AI, if a source is behind a paywall, they're not able to steal the content. They can only kind of link to the content. The headlines might be enough for people. And then if you decide you want to actually read those stories on the Saratogian site, at some point you're going to hit a paywall. I'm already a subscriber, so I wouldn't have hit that.
So they clicked through and you literally saw the PDF edition of your...
I'm trying to remember now whether it was the e-edition of the page or just the website version of the page.
But the e-edition should be behind a paywall.
Yeah, and so would the digital edition. Both are behind the paywall.
So was it a satisfying experience in terms of
It made me mad. It made me mad because they are stealing content. They wouldn't even be able to provide that initial list without having access to the content.
Is it a satisfying experience for you, Ian?
Not the first time I used it. And I'll just say, if people are using this tool to look up local news, that's probably a win for us in the aggregate. But my experience was with a more Albany-centric search, I got a bunch of old articles. The hits for me were things that I remembered us reading about or writing about a few months ago, which was interesting. None of the hits that came back when I asked what was new in the community came from WAMC. So then I followed up and asked, well, what about public media news stories? And then I got a response of a very generic definition of which stations in this area are public stations. But the step to getting WAMC's news stories fed to me didn't happen in this process. So I did not enjoy it. I also, maybe I'm old-fashioned, I can't imagine trying to access local news in this manner, at least at this step. Maybe it will, in a few generations, become easier to use or more convenient. But to me, this was like a waste of time almost. It was so inefficient.
Have you ever thought about asking your Google Assistant or Alexa, like, what's the local news today? That's what I worry about, what's going to happen with AI, is people are going to get up in the morning and ask their speaker or their virtual assistant what the local news is, and they're going to get old local news or local news scraped from TV station or the most readily available content, which is not going to be your deep dive local news.
And building on that, that one of the issues is that they are just glomming together bits and pieces and trying to figure out what makes sense in this report. It could be a summary that's inaccurate.
But could you live with it if it provided attribution? In other words, even if it didn't have a link, if there was a story that broke on WAMC and they reported it as if it was their own, but then said, comma, as first reported by WAMC, I mean, people can do that now. If I, as a publisher of a daily newspaper, hear something on the radio or read something in the New York Times and we do a story on it, we would attribute where the story comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fight that's existed with Facebook and other platforms has been about the attribution. I think the fears with AI is the idea of generative AI. In other words, scraping an entire media market and coming to some approximation of what the computer thinks is the truth based on probabilities and words that have gone into the computer. And you can tell I don't have a background in this, but we all know sitting in this room that there's kind of a hierarchy of outlets. You know, there's a difference in quality. And if you see something from a certain outlet compared to another one, you take it with a grain of salt, perhaps, because you know the track record's not as good. I don't know if that sort of value judgment is going into this open AI process that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's different than in Saratoga, for instance. There's a guy who has, I don't know if it's also on a website, but he sends out an aggregated summary of the news called Saratoga Report. And I can't remember how I initially got on the email list, and I don't know how economically successful it is or what his readership numbers are, but he does have quite a bit of, seems to me, advertising on it. And he lists all these one-sentence summaries of stories, and then when you click, it will link you to the Saratogian or the Times Union or perhaps WAMC, something that takes you to the source, if you can then access the source. So that's different, and people seem to like that.
So the open AI agreement with News Corp, and by which they're going to pay them $250 million to be able to access their content, so that's a big player, and it's also a certain kind of news media. It's the New York Post, the Wall Street Journal. It tends to skew conservative. It has also reached agreements with the Associated Press, which is a more middle-of-the-road news producer, but it also indicates that they're dealing with the big players, and the small markets, the small radio stations, even the regional-sized newspapers aren't going to be among the things that get scraped or among the things that get compensated.
That's the key.
Well, I was just going to say that it seems to me the train has left the station. And much like when we were sitting in this room doing this program at the dawn of the internet as it related to newspapers primarily, we saw many things that we said to ourselves, this is the wild, wild west, and give it a few years, it's going to straighten itself out. I'm hopeful that this kind of feedback that we're providing and what's being provided in court or elsewhere is going to put the AI experience on a better track for all of us. But I know one thing, it's not going to make AI go away, nor should we expect AI to go away. And by the way, was it you just mentioned the Associated Press or, oh, Judy? maybe I'm overreacting, but we've seen, and I think we've talked about here, newspapers and newspaper chain are dropping the Associated Press. I never thought that I would live to see the day that the Associated Press might be in financial problem, but they will be if more and more media companies start eliminating it.
We have a good use for the AP here at WAMC, but, you know, it is one of those topics of discussion for stations like ours to spend a lot of money on the AP. And, you know, for places that don't have maybe an hourly or half-hourly newscast or the need to very quickly update their website with national, international news, the product's been decimated. The local news coverage, the statehouse news coverage is just not what it once was. And a lot of places say it's not worth it anymore.
There's a conundrum because if you drop the Associated Press, which is very tempting, we talked about it some years ago, so it's not a new phenomenon. But if you drop the Associated Press, you still got to put content in your newspaper or on your air. And do you have enough locally generated content to substitute for the space that is now been given away by us not using AP anymore?
On Meta AI, it's worrisome that, one, they're scraping things that may not be current, may not be accurate, don't tell you anything, don't have accurate links, and at the same time, preventing legitimate sharing of stories that contain links to take people to where that news is.
Yeah, they're not being intelligent about it sometimes, it seems like.
Seems.
Let's move on to public radio. We are airing on public radio, this program, and we tend to focus a lot about what's happening in America, but we should note that public broadcasters in democracies around the world are confronting these challenges that seem far more severe than what the U.S. public media realm is facing. Poland, Slovakia, France, and even Italy, the public broadcasters there are facing challenges from within about controlling what goes out on the air, and the resistance within the news organizations is pretty intense. In Italy, for example, the government is proposing to cut by a quarter the cost of a license fee that helps fund public radio. In France, they have been roiled by a controversy in which one of the journalists has been discovered to be actively working with politicians to help them craft their message. So it seems like public radio is under attack, but maybe some of this is justified. Ian, you're the public radio guy. What's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, some of these stories that we read about what's happening in Europe the other day made me feel a little bit more bullish about the American public media scene right now, which is pretty surprising given all of the bad headlines in this country about layoffs. You know, our colleagues at stations, bigger stations with bigger budgets, taking huge hits in places like Boston and other big cities where they've really been industry leaders. I was on a meeting, and I'm pretty sure I can talk about this, but I was on a meeting the other day convened by NPR to gather all the member stations to talk about fallout from the famous Yuri Berliner essay that we've talked about on this show a few times already that kind of set off some introspection and a lot of outside criticism of public media in our country. And NPR responded by getting this cabal of editors together that they're calling the backstop, a specially funded group of people who will help keep NPR from repeating the mistakes that Yuri Berliner claimed it had been making and led to a lot of soul searching. And it's going to be very interesting for the member stations who take a lot of the flack for the sins of NPR to keep tabs on how the system responds to this latest emergency. There's no question in my mind that that's what we're looking at right now. We are under a microscope, and it's coming at a time of weakness for the system when revenues are broadly down and places are making really hard choices. And it's not lost on me at all that we're on the cusp of a very important fund drive here for WAMC. And I was reading about the layoffs the other day in Boston, where they lost like 30-something staffers. And for WAMC to think about the scale of that here, they're obviously a bigger station than this, but that would mean some very real changes to what we actually offer as a newsroom and as a station. If we were to take a sizable blow in staff here, I mean, shows like this would find themselves on the chopping block. So it's really
not. Wait a
not
minute. This is a low overhead show.
I mean, that may be true, but someone still has to make it.
But just think about, it's almost hard to fathom that a station that is a public radio station based in Boston is facing the kind of financial problems that it is and has become common in other places. One would think that Boston would be the home office for what NPR is and what NPR stands for. All of the educational institutions in the Boston area, I don't want to sound like I'm stereotyping, but if you were going to start an NPR tomorrow, you know, I'd be on Boylston Street looking for space.
And that's all true, but I also know it's a performance industry, and they said that certain shows were not bringing back the revenue that they cost to make. They were all seeing that underwriting revenue is sharply down. So these are fragile institutions. And also, you know, it's now that we have some perspective and some years to look back on it, we've experienced in the time that I've worked here, which is 15 years, some tremendous swings. You know, the fallout from the Great Recession was devastating to this station and others. And then there was a huge comeback not long after President Trump was inaugurated. A lot of people made donations and bought news subscriptions and really tuned into the news in a way that they hadn't before. And then, you know, that's kind of tailed off, and we had COVID-19. A lot of the organizations that help support places like this found themselves in existential crisis. So it's hard to make a 5 or 10 year plan with all of those unknowns.
You know, it's good to hear your perspective, because there are some media critics who say that public radio, or NPR specifically, is overreacting to what happened, the fallout for the early Berliner case, that public media in general has long been a favorite target of conservative media, and that maybe they should have just gone forward. But you're talking about really concrete, real problems. Did they talk at all about any partisan slant or any desire to rein in how they do what they do, or exactly what stories they air?
It's interesting. And we didn't get into that many specifics on the call, but I would say my experience with being on meetings like this over the years is that NPR and the network system, such as it is solicitous of criticism and very open to thinking hard about critiques of it, and also very difficult to change at the same time. And I don't know that everything Yuri Berliner said was correct. That's the other thing. It's a bit of a Rorschach test, and these newsrooms are making content around the clock. And if you happen to miss the segment that aligns with your view, you think they didn't cover it. And that's just never the case.
Let's move on to the economy. So this is something that I saw as I was headed out the door today. This is the American public's misconceptions about the economy. There's a new Harris poll out they conducted for The Guardian that shows 56% of people in the U.S. believe that the U.S. is in recession, even though the gross national product has been growing. 49% think unemployment is at a 50-year high when it's actually at a 50-year low. 49% think that the stock market is down for the year, even though it's up. My question to you guys is, how much is the media to blame for these poor misconceptions out there?
Just one more layer. The poll, who did they poll? It was just a national poll?
It was a national poll.
So no demographics to that. Well, I think the answer to that question is that there is so much media out there that many people choose the media of their choice, and the media of their choice may be a media that has a slant that would lead them to believe just what you said, that their economy is in bad shape, etc. So the media is to blame. Maybe some of the media is to blame, which is my key phrase that I keep using. Don't blame all of the media for this, because somebody has been reporting it accurately.
I think that point is very well taken. I also think there's an onus on the Democratic National Committee to do a better job, for Joe Biden and his campaign people to do a better job of using social media, getting their word out, getting their people out to repeat the messages that the public ought to hear, because the real numbers would help them. What people, besides doing what Ira is, I think, correctly saying, maybe listening to quote-unquote news that isn't true, they're seeing the price of housing is out of control, and the price of groceries, though it's not rising as fast as it was before, things are noticeably higher on the grocery store. So where it just hits you immediately, it leaves people with an impression.
Yeah, it reminds me of the last New York State election we had in 2022. To a degree, you know, perception is reality for how people think about these very difficult to understand issues like the economy. I listen to Marketplace every day. It's really hard to know how the economy is for the average American, given how you decide to measure it. But I remember 2 years ago, in an era when, you know, compared to the highs of decades ago, crime is at a low. It's at a historic low. It's a very safe time to be alive in America right now. And yet the entire midterm election that year and the governor's race between Kathy Hochul and Lee Zeldin was really about crime. And who can tell someone who watches somebody pushed in front of a subway in New York City that, well, you know, crime is down. You may have seen an outlying example that kind of disproves the point here, but no, basically it's safe out there. No, perception matters, and it's really hard to dislodge that kind of anecdotal experience from broader truths, I think.
You know, newspapers used to put the stock market charts at the top of the front page or on the top of the business page. They stopped doing it a few years ago. I know that WAMC still has your stock market report every day that you
on the hour.
Yeah, says whether or not it's up or down, and I think that has some impact on people's ability to understand what's happening, at least in the stock market. But I tended to think the economy was boring to cover, but Marketplace does a great job of making it interesting, and I think that's what we need to do more of.
And also, can we make connections to how these numbers actually impact you? If Lucky Charms is twice what it used to be, but also the government gave you a $1,500 check and forgave your student loans, maybe you are doing a little bit better now.
Exactly. I think that visit to the grocery store is really having an impact on people, and I think it can't be overlooked.
And by the way, I don't know how widespread it is. I know my old newspaper still has stock listings every day, and I think it's a mistake if you don't have it, because if nothing else, people who still read newspapers tend to be older, and they tend to be the ones who have an interest in the stock market because of their retirement funds. So if in fact it is a widespread movement to start eliminating stocks from the pages of newspapers, I think that's a short-term mistake.
Yeah, I was just stunned by the amount of misinformation or the amount of misperception out there. I was also stunned when I saw this new report from Pew Research Center. 2023 report asked Americans how important it is for journalists they get their news from. They share their politics than any other personal trait. I found this amazing because I don't care what the politics of the person who's reporting the news is at all. I don't care what religion they are. I don't care about any of this stuff. But apparently, 39% of Americans believe it's important that the journalists they get their news from share their political views. How did this happen?
And 30% of Americans think Trump would be a good choice for president, so go figure.
Well, listen, those of us who have been in the media business for a long time, and that's all four of us in this room, know that our reporters and our editors have biases. But we also know that if it's a newsroom worth its salt, those biases are put on the back shelf when you're doing your job. Unfortunately, as the years have gone by and as media has continued to split, there are people who just don't buy that concept. They don't, you know, and even on this program, we've had arguments where one of our former participants always played devil's advocate and said, you mean to tell me if somebody believes in A, that A is not showing up in his or her stories? I would always argue, no, they're not showing up in the stories. But people are prone to believe that stuff is biased based on their personal beliefs.
I think the truth is somewhere in between that a reporter's and editor's biases do show up in subtle ways, not intentionally to mislead, but in how you choose to frame your story, what quotes you decide to use, what you like to include, which you want to make sure you include in the lead, how the headline's written. All those things cannot help. They're decisions that are made based on what you believe is important to the readers. And your own life's experiences and beliefs has to be a part of the filter. I thought it was interesting in that study, Judy, that younger people wanted to see more younger people. I mean, more important to me than the politics of the person that's listening to the echo chamber was seeing people delivering news, hearing people delivering news who are like them, that you want to be able to somehow identify with the people who are delivering the news.
We had a conversation here the other day about this very issue, which is coverage choice and framing are where your blind spots are. If you happen to agree personally with the protester who's protesting X, then do you give a sympathetic story to that issue in short shrift to the other side? And, you know, being aware of that and making sure that you're not putting your finger on the scale. Maybe people don't see it. I'm sure they don't. According to this poll, they definitely don't. These are conversations we have in our newsroom on a daily basis to make sure that our framing is correct. Are we saying this or is the source saying this? Is this conversation part, is it actually part of a national thing or is this different in some way? And I worry about this all the time. It literally keeps me up.
And making sure that a story presents all points of view if more than one point of view exists.
Exactly.
You know, I should note that liberal Democrats are more likely than conservative Republicans to want this from, they want to get their news from someone who they think is like-minded. So there's a 50% of liberal Democrats identified as wanting that as opposed to 40% of right-leaning Republicans. It's a phenomenon that's most likely on the fringes of a political divide.
So should we start having a line under our byline saying all of our physical attributes and attributes and what we believe?
Likes to play soccer, eats pastrami. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Thanks to Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and Ian Pickus. I'm Judy Patrick. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to join us next week when Rex Smith will be back on The Nedia Project.
Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Andrew Waite, news columnist for the Daily Gazette. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
The union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers...